Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Wander Middle-earth in the Lore of the Rings podcast, where we wander the world of J.R.R. Tolkien. In the Lore of the Rings podcast, we explore the inspiring tales and rich mythology of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings Legendarium, and connect it to the movies and the new Rings of Power series. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. You'll find a new lore-packed episode every Thursday. Come wander and not be lost with the Lore of the Rings podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm William.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything tabletop role-playing games.
And today we are going to the gray wastes of Hades. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How are you doing today?
I'm wasted.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding. No, I'm doing good. How That's are you? Good.
I'm glad. I'm doing pretty good myself. Yeah.
Sick.
Neither wasted nor gray.
Nor gray. Yeah. We don't get gray on this show. It's all positivity up in here.
Well, no, not today. Today's going to be really gray and very dour, actually.
Well, that's the notes. I'm talking about our demeanors.
That's true. Yes. Our demeanors are never gray or wasteful or Hades.
Any of those.
Yeah.
None of them.
So if you want a say in what we say on this show, you got to get in on the Patreon voted topic polls we have going over on Patreon.
That's true. We do have those.
Mm-hmm.
We have patreon.com/thedungeoncast is a place you can go to participate in that.
Indeed.
I mean, you could scream it into the comments or the Discord or whatever ether you decide to bark into. But, you know, if you want to really get in this brain, you know what to do.
Indeed. And where did our patrons send us this month? Well, this month, we are putting on our board shorts and sunglasses before having the horrible realization that the cruise we got on was not, in fact, an all-paid adventure to the Bahamas, but a one-way trip down the River Styx to the gloomiest plain in the universe.
No. Oh.
The Gray Wastes of Hades.
Okay.
Thanks, patrons.
Down the River Styx, the Gray Wastes of Hades. So, yeah, thank you, patrons. We really appreciate you guys participating in the votes. Can you touch a little bit more on how exactly that poll system works? Because they're episodes are nominated and voted on, right?
So the way it works is first a topic suggestion thread will get posted, in which anyone who's a patron can get in there and make a suggestion. Usually right now we're sitting between like 9 to 15 suggestions per thread.
Okay.
At which point, after a couple weeks goes by and like there's no more activity, I put up a poll. And what I'll do is I'll choose four of the suggested topics, usually heavily weighted by how many people like certain things. Mm. And also what I, you know, feel like talking about during that time period.
It's important.
Yeah. And then I let the patrons vote on it. Once the votes all roll in, which they're averaging about 200 or so votes.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever wins, wins.
That's almost that's a good chunk of the people there, I think, too.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know how many people are on Patreon.
It might be more like 100, actually. I might have misquoted.
But, yeah, there's definitely... Well, thank you guys for being so active on there. I really appreciate it. And obviously, just being there, that's a big deal for us. It helps us a lot. It's like the main way we get financially supported. I think it's the most consistent thing that we have going on, too. So
indeed.
Thank you guys a lot. And you've earned this.
Indeed. So... this place, Hades, is gray and lifeless. Mm. It's like a proto Shadowfell, but less cool.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
Okay.
I'll leave you decide.
All right.
It's interesting in its own way, and I think there are a lot of cool things you can do with this outer plane in your campaign. But I feel like Hades, like a lot of the outer planes not named the Abyss, Celestia, or the Nine Hells, is a bit underdeveloped and underutilized. Mm. Hades specifically suffers from the fact that the Shadowfell ticks a lot of the same boxes and has a lot more cool lore and monsters going on. Or at least more iconic monsters and races. But by the end of this, I will let you decide on this conclusion. I will try and brainstorm what I would do to utilize the plane of existence. So let's get into it.
Yeah, sure. I imagine it's there's a lot of content in the other planes. So if it's, you know, if you're looking to pick like from the pool here, mm-hmm. it's like, which one am I going to start with? Probably not this one.
Probably not.
Okay.
My thing is like, okay, why does the Abyss get infinite planes?
Yeah.
While every other one, okay, so Nine Hells has 9, right? But 9 is actually, you know, a healthy amount, and they're pretty well detailed. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these planes, including the one we're talking about today, has anywhere from 2 to 4.
Oh, okay.
And it's just, and they're not very well, there's just not a lot written about them.
Yeah, because they weren't as cool, right?
Because they weren't as cool.
So even the writers jumped out. But yeah. That leaves space for you to go in and make something awesome.
Very true. So let's get into it. The Grey Wastes of Hades, also known as the Grey Waste, is the plane of evil balanced between law and chaos. It is where evil springs eternal. It is a plane of endless apathy and despair. It is a great battlefield of the Blood War. Hades sits at the nadir of the lower planes, halfway between the devils and demons, each bent on the other's annihilation. Thus, it often sees its gray plains darkened by vast armies of demons battling equally vast armies of devils who neither ask nor give quarter.
Mm, okay.
So, even now, the first thing we're learning about it is that it is basically a battlefield of those other two cooler planes.
I was just going to say, they're bringing their cool to this place.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, if any plane defines the nature of true evil, it is the Grey Waste. In the Grey Waste of Hades, pure, undiluted evil acts as a powerful spiritual force that drags all creatures down. Here, even the consuming rage of the Abyss and the devious plotting of the Nine Hells are subjugated to the hopelessness. Apathy and despair seep into everything at the pole of evil. Hades slowly kills the visitor's dreams and desires, leaving the withered husk of what used to be a fiery spirit. Spend enough time in Hades and visitors give up on things that used to matter, eventually giving into total apathy.
So kind of like the Shadowfell, you go gray with it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. It's the big sad.
The big sad.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about this place, man, but I don't know.
So Hades has 3 layers called glooms. The glooms of the Grey Wastes are just that, dull gray lands. The earth is gray, the sky is gray, the petitioners are gray. Color is foreign here, as if vision itself is subverted. When visitors step into the plane, everything goes from color to white, black, or gray. There's no sun, no moon, and no stars above, just a bleak gray radiance emanating from the sky.
Okay, it's very boring. When you leave a colorful place and go here, the contrast is super stark. You don't have to hit on it like every time you describe something like it's gray like everything else.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You can kind of
Did you ever watch the original American version of The Ring?
No, I don't think I watched The Ring.
No, really? Horror movie The Ring?
Yeah, I think I let that one slide by me.
Oh, it's actually really good. I really like, as if you like horror movies.
I like more psychological stuff, so I think that's why I skipped it.
I like spiritual, supernatural horror movies.
Yeah, it is a ghost, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, I do like that movie, the American one, and I like the Japanese one as well. But the thing about the American one is it's just the grayest movie. It is just the grayest
palette.
Movie.
Yeah,
it's palette. Everything is gray.
Well, I watched Blair Witch Project. That one had some color issues, I think, because everything's filmed on a handycam.
For sure.
Kind of similar thing. It's nighttime. They're in the woods. It's not colorful.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. At least that's what I remember. It's been a while since I watched the Blair Witch
it's been
Project.
A long time
That's a pretty old movie at this point.
Yeah. I enjoyed my first watch of it. This grayness affects more than vision. It is a spiritual grayness. It reaches into the hearts of all who spend time in Hades. Those who spend more time here than they should become devoid of feeling. They don't laugh, don't cry, they just don't care. All they do is despair, their hope gone and never to return. Both the entrapping trait of Hades and the spiritual sickness is called the grays and are a manifestation of the grayness of Hades.
The big grays, we'll call it, instead of the big sads.
Foul creatures of every sort can be found in the Grey Wastes. Because this is a battlefield of the lower planes, demons, devils, slotty formians, and even the occasional angel can be found here, spying for the war effort or deserting their unit. And, of course, Eugoliths are abound. Despite the fact that most of the race has moved from this plane, their original home, to the neighboring plane of Gehenna, which is a very interesting thing. So the Eugoliths, originally, they were born and created here in Hades.
Right, okay.
But over time, they have pretty much, 80% have all migrated permanently to Gehenna, which we did an episode on.
Yeah, yeah.
Just weird. Just, it doesn't really get explained as to the why.
Too gray.
Just this place sucks, I guess, is really what it is.
Too much blood war happening.
Yeah. Night hags are also thick in Hades. In a lot of ways, when I think of this plane, night hags are the first creatures I think of. Here, they constantly seek out beings called larvae. Larvae are former mortals of selfish and malicious nature whose souls have come here after death. Mm-hmm. They are medium-sized worms with heads that resemble the heads of their mortal bodies. Larvae serve as the currency of the lower planes, especially among night hags, liches, demons, devils, and eugoliths. Most are as likely to be used as food as to power a spell. The rare lucky larva is sometimes promoted to the lower form of eugolith.
Oh, okay. So if you're evil and up and coming worm, you can get converted maybe.
Yeah, to a eugolith, which is, you know, the neutral evil fiends.
Just being used as material for spell casting sounds
pretty awful.
Pretty vicious. Yeah,
absolutely.
You probably just get torn asunder and then like your energy gets converted.
Yep,
so, yeah,
the fabric of your existence. Yeah. These larvae are so valuable to night hags that the prime reason they leave Hades to range the prime material plane is not to merely work random evil, as is often assumed, but to collect nourishment for their cash flocks. Which need to be sprayed regularly with humanoid blood in order to remain hale and healthy.
Oh, okay.
The blood of good aligned beings is held to be of superior nutritional quality to any other type.
Hey, why is your Windex red? I didn't even ask about that. Hey, a nasty little spray bottle? That sounds, ooh. Ah, oh, God. Yeah, it's clogged every now and again. You gotta like... What stops coagulation? There's probably some like insect venom that does that, like tick bites or like something like that.
I do believe that there are snake bites that
stop creatures, parasites that feed. They don't want the blood coagulation, right? So they probably have something in their saliva or whatever.
Definitely.
Yeah, they got that in the spray bottle, too.
Absolutely, they do. We also talked about this years ago, but Hades is famously host of herds of fiery nightmares as well.
Ooh, the flamey horse.
The flamey horses, yeah.
Not the bad dream.
Not the bad dream, no.
You know what I think about sometimes?
What?
The Doulahan.
Yeah, what about the Doulahan?
I mean, it's spooky. We're in the spooktacular right now.
Yeah,
this is a spooky episode.
There's a band, they're called The First of October, and they have a song called Headless, which is sung from the point of view of the Headless Horseman.
Oh, cool.
And it's really dumb, and I love it.
I've been coming across so many songs. There's a song about this pig that wins the county fair prize.
And hell yeah.
Start worshiping it like a god.
What?
I forgot the name of it. I could pull it up right
now. Okay, for sure.
Or like there's a band that like covers, they don't cover, it's a metal band that does, who's that guy that has all those fucking crunchy sound bits? It's like, they're putting chemicals in the water, they're turning the freaking
Alex
frogs.
Jones. You told me about this.
The Alex Jones band. Jesus, so that they'll let Alex Jones talk and just play metal over it.
That's
and like
insane.
Cut it a certain way to make it part of the song. There's insane. a lot of music out there. Spotify is a crazy place lately.
Spotify
is new SoundCloud. Like you can just kind of throw whatever up there.
It's true. Yeah. Anyways, back to Hades. Petitioners in Hades are mostly grayish ghosts. Big surprise. Spirits so depleted by the waste that they lack solidity. They rarely speak, instead crowding around visitors like moths around a candle, seeking the warmth of emotion and hope that living beings possess. Spirits of particularly selfish and malicious mortals that come to Hades become larvae.
Okay.
The first layer, or gloom, of Hades is called Oinos, and is named for the lord of the eugoliths who dwells here, the Oinoloth. Oinos is a land of stunted trees, roving fiends, and virulent disease. But more than anything else, it is a plain ravaged by war. This is a central battlefield of the Blood War. Fiends, warrior slaves, trained beasts, and hired mercenaries gather here to wage horrific battles on an epic scale. These battles despoil the already bleak terrain. The sounds of rending claws, clashing weapons, and screams echo across the entire lair.
That's a cool thing to kind of lean into for describing the arena or whatever this plane is. Lean into the noise of it rather than like the colors of it, and like what you see. Do you hear? What do you smell? Do you think it's actually pronounced Einoloth? They put the O on there so they know. Sorry, that's a joke about something that happened last episode.
Greyhawk. That's funny. The number one major location of Oinos is the seat of the Oinoloth's power, Kin Oin, the Wasting Tower.
Oh my gosh.
A 20-mile high tower. 20 miles. That's higher than like
is stupid tall.
The Earth's like lower breathable atmosphere, by the way.
That is stupid tall.
From my understanding. Maybe I'm wrong.
The coolest towers have the dopest wizards inside of them too. I can't wait. So this guy is evil as fuck.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get to it. So, okay. A 20-mile-high tower, Kin Oin looks like nothing so much as a freestanding spinal column. Some say that's exactly what it is, the backbone of a deity slain by Yugoliths.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. That literally goes on in the lower planes.
Mm-hmm. Kin Oin plunges as deep into Oinos's gray soil as it ascends into the air, so the tower's sublevels tunnel 20 miles deep.
Shoot.
Yeah. The Wasting Tower is ruled by an Ultraloth prince transformed by dark magic into something greater, a disease-ridden entity known as the Oinoloth, ruler of all Yugoliths. In fact, some stories hint that the entire Yugolith race was birthed here, arising in a pit at the absolute bottom of Kin Oin. None but Yugoliths have ever held the tower, despite the constant array of fiendish armies outside. The rooms and floors of the tower seem to have no end, spawning vats, magical laboratories, and meditation chambers can be found here, as can orreries, suites of rooms for Yugoliths, and floors that are themselves battlegrounds and drill fields.
What are orreries?
It's, like ash astrology stuff, like watching the stars that don't fucking exist here because it's Hades.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's my understanding of what an orrery is, like, you know, telescopes and.
Oh, yeah, oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
Like kind of like an observatory. Observatory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So there is some sort of celestial bodies here that are part. They're probably gray.
Do you remember when we did the Gehenna episode, the moon that wasn't a moon? Do you remember that? It was a giant mimic.
Oh, yeah. That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, wild. I could probably eat an Aster Eater. Did that come up?
Probably.
If it didn't, it's coming up now. It should have been a joke in that episode. That'd be fucking funny and gross.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sexually charged. Okay,
The Oinoloth rules from the tower's zenith, and the token of their rulership is an artifact called the Siege Malicious. The Siege Malicious is a gargantuan, immovable throne carved from the stone of the Wasting Tower itself. The throne is inlaid with tarnished silver, base copper, and brass. A circular crown of rubies adorns the top of the high seat, which is just large enough to sit a huge creature.
Oh, wow. Okay, I really like the idea of the throne in a throne room being like part of the affixed like foundation of the building like this, they're talking about.
I think it's cool, too.
That is a very cool look.
Yes. The Siege Malicious's power is to determine the Oinoloth and give the prospective ruler of Kin Oin full control over diseases on Oinos. This is done by a prospective Oinoloth sitting on the throne. If the one sitting has killed the predecessor, the throne accepts them as the new Oinoloth, but makes their skin slough off.
Oh, great.
With the loss of skin comes power over diseases on Oinos, namely the power to create, modify, or nullify any disease, as well, of course, as dominion over the lair itself.
When skin sloughs off, is that like it gets like wet and like just slips like a pillowcase, like taking a pillowcase off a pillow?
I picture like skin sloughing off, by the way, comes up in D&D way more often than you think it should.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like it falls away like meat off of a bone. That's
that's kind of the visual I have going on, too. Let me look up, like, slough isn't a super... like
common word.
Yeah, not, I mean, it's around for sure. I know it.
Like every other episode of the Dungeon Cast.
You're right. Okay, so the first definition is a swamp, and then the second one is a situation characterized by a lack of progress or activity. The economic slough of the interwar years. So then the second one, let's see. Sheds or remove like a layer of dead skin. So yeah, like reptiles, their skin sloughs off, so they can literally like crawl out of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, like taking a pillowcase off of a pillow. Or
there,
like,
we go.
Taking you, he sloughed off his shirt. That's 50 Shades of Grey up in Hades.
It's all gray up
there. Everything's getting sloughed off, man.
Yeah. No. When a person who does not qualify as the Oinoloth, for example, a person who merely drove away but did not kill the current Oinoloth, sits on the throne strikes them with a particularly strong version of a disease called gray wasting that erodes the person's force of personality. Damn.
Well, I couldn't get his skin, so I got his heart.
I made him so fucking boring.
Yes, got another one.
Let's take a short rest.
It's the grand adventures of Ilion and Bean.
Oh, Ilion. Ilion, where are you?
I'm over here.
Thank God. You're alive. Oh, there you are. Are you hurt?
I
A little sore and bruised, but I'll be all right.
Same. I got my ass plate back on just in time. Could have been an absolute disaster.
Could have been a catastrophe.
A catastrophe.
Ben, stop laughing. Yeah, yes. I have something important to share with you. Look. Look what I managed to retrieve.
Oh.
It is, yes.
Idiot.
A piece of the pendant of plenteous patrons.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
How did you get it?
Well, it was shame that the ass blast shattered it into, who knows how many pieces. And I managed to capture this shrapnel in my bare hand before we were teleported to whatever place we're in.
Yes, I was going to ask you next, since you are here alive and well and with this beautiful piece of the pendant. Where are we? It seems gray.
Yes, and quite misty.
Yeah, what's up with all these cliffs? They're everywhere.
To my best guess, I would say that the arcane singularity that was formed when the Eldritch Blast ricocheted off of your right buttocks cheek and into the Pendant of Plenteous Patrons created a vortex that ended up transporting us to a random location in the cosmos. It's rather dreary here. It could be the material plane, could be the Shadowfell. Could be a number of places, Ben. I'm not at liberty to inform you on what it is quite yet. I need to get a bearing on my surroundings.
Who were those guys? They were weird.
They were very strange and obviously warlocks.
They said that they recognized us.
Yes, I have no idea what they're talking about.
They said they had a strange book. It felt evil. I could feel its evil presence.
I did not get a chance to look at the book.
I'm good at feeling out for evil. I just got a vibe, you know.
Kind of like a paladin.
No, not really. I mean, Dan showed me a couple things, but nothing like him.
Are you multi-classed and you never told me?
No, I just, you know, I've got some additional trainings. It's more like a vibe check. You know, don't worry about it.
Duly noted.
Speaking of said vibe check, I've got a ping.
Yes?
Someone approaches. Listen. Footsteps.
Quickly, I must hide the pendant of plenty of nature. They never know we have to.
Yes, of course. Shard. We should call it the Shard.
Yes, we'll call it a Shard. The Shard.
The Shard of Plenteous Patrons.
Yes,
that's a good name for it. They're approaching. They're coming.
Hello, boys. What brings you to the plane of Hades?
Your voice sounds familiar.
Oh, does it? You've probably met my sister.
Oh, God. You wouldn't happen to be related to a Hagatha, would you?
Yes, of course. I'm pleased that you know of our ilk. I am the Night Hag, Hagnus.
God, Ben, they're multiplying.
They're everywhere. Why? I don't. At least she's wearing shoes.
Yes, indeed. Hagnus, did you say we were on the plane of Hades?
That's correct.
Oh, this is bad, Ben. This is really terrible. We're at the nadir of the outer planes, the lower planes to be specific. This is an evil location, and not one easily escaped.
Yeah, it seems pretty bad. Hey, don't hags make deals?
Yes, but they're usually quite dangerous to deal with.
Oh, or they're disgusting, I remember.
Well, both.
Yes, maybe we can do something for...
I can hear you. I can hear you. Yeah, we can, you know, if that's what you're trying to do, you're trying to get out of here, I can make a deal. What do you got? What do you got for me? I heard what you want to do. What are you going to do for old Hagnus?
Well, my lady, I am a wizard of great power and renown, and perhaps I could... What is it that you desire? What is your greatest desire? I may have a shard of power that could give to you the abilities to pursue your dreams.
I could kill you and take the shard.
I challenge you to do so. I am Ilion the Green.
Oh, my bad.
That wasn't the expected response, but I appreciate it.
You know what? Let's just keep it at the deal. You know, I can help you, you can help me, and then I do like my greatest desire. Let me think about it. Well, when I'm not night hagging around... I do like to put my feet in the River Styx, and, you know, but I need a special cream to go on after to keep my feet hydrated.
Oh, God, the feet. Always the feet.
River Styx really dry you out. You know, takes the corns off, but then, you know, what's left? You don't want to see it.
I definitely don't.
No, please, let's keep the feet contained. As a matter of fact, you could take 10 steps back, and this mist will even help obscure your feet even more.
Are you sure? They're just a pair of slippies.
Oh, no, that's all right.
Please don't. We'll give you what you want.
Agnes,
what is the lotion you require? Is that what it is?
If I provide this cream to you, will you provide us with a portal back to the material plane?
Yeah, sure. I'm gonna need a couple strands of your hair, too, though. And it might feel a little weird when you go. But other than that, yeah, you gave me my cream. And I need a lot of it. I need a lot. I have abnormally large feet. Even for a hag.
What do you think, Ilion? Do you think you could make that happen? I mean, you just procured the shard. I know you're very capable when doing your magics. I would assume.
Ben, I believe that this shard has just enough power to make this happen. Let us do it.
If it's the only way.
The problem is, if I conjure the cream, we don't have a vessel to hold it.
Conjure the cream is my favorite bard troop. You know what? I don't see another way out of this.
She's gonna have to take the slippies off.
No. Oh, God.
There's no way. I have nothing to put this cream in. I'm gonna have to apply it directly.
Oh, it's gonna go on right now? Okay. I got a jar.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God. You come prepared. These hags come prepared with the jar. Thank goodness.
Yes, Hagnus. I almost said Hagatha. Put the jar down.
Okay.
Right there.
There it is.
Open the lid.
Jar down, lid off.
I will evoke the funds provided to me by the fraction of a thousand benefit.
benefactors. Beneficiaries.
I'm speaking magic ease.
I'm sorry.
Ian, please.
I'm sorry. Do your magic ease.
The fraction of a thousand generous benefactors.
Wow, you really creamed the hell out of my jar. Good job. That'll do it. Now I'm going to do my magic.
You know, Ben, they do say that hags use weird magic.
It's just magic ease, right? Or is it different?
It's definitely different.
What happened? Where are we?
Oh, hey, the mist went away.
There's no more cliffs.
Indeed.
There's no more Hagnus.
Well, good.
Well, good.
Let's go.
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're fucking back.
Indeed we are.
Man, feels good.
Does it? It feels gray and wasteful to me.
Oh, I'm coming off of an alien and beer and high, probably. Oh, although true. We don't record those till after the episode and they get edited in.
That's very true.
I mean, no, they don't. They actually happen. That's what I meant to say.
I saw a comment the other day saying that the ads before and after the alien and beer and show were also pretty good.
I saw that too. What are you talking about, person? Is that
they're trying to say that the alien and beer and show is so good. It's like the main show to them.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. I was like, I put in the ad, like we have to put in ad markers as part of our contract with Realm and with every other entity that we've dealt with. And I was like, I put the ads in after Ilion and Beern.
They're trying to say that the Dungeon Cast is also pretty cool.
The podcast within the podcast is Ilion and Beern. I've always wanted to do that, kind of like the Munch Squad.
I think about that as well.
That's been fun. If you want to support Ilion and Beern, you can do so by going to patreon.com/thedungeoncast, where they have finally encountered the Pendant of Plenteous Patrons. And also, if you wouldn't mind, Will, tell the audience how you spell your character's name.
Illion is Illian. Why?
And Beern is capital B E E R N. Just in case anybody wants to know.
Okay.
I just go on a correction. Like people always get us for saying shit the wrong way.
You're so vindictive, Brian.
That's Sarah Rack. I don't care. I mean, I do. B E E R N. And if you wanna have fun with it, just spell it wrong. I'm gonna come get everybody I see doing it. I have so far.
Yeah, I know. I've seen
I just
you do
type,
it.
It's not to be. I'm not mad. I just want it, like, just so people know. I'll just throw it in there, Beern. I won't say anything else. Usually, I'll just write it.
Yeah, I've seen you do it.
It's okay. I'm not upset.
He swears.
I swear.
All right, let's talk a bit about the Oinoloth.
Okay.
Who's also very displeased most of the time.
Yeah, people don't usually hit that oi, the O. Or maybe they do.
The Oinoloth, sometimes called the Oinodaemon, is the nominal lord of the Ugalis. That's actually, we haven't really talked about it. We probably talked about it 5 years ago when we did the Ugalis episode. But originally, the Ugalis were called daemons, not Ugalis.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know how, like, all the Ugalis, they're like the Mezoloth, the Arcana Loth, the Ultra Loth. Before, they were the Mezodaemon, the Arcana Daemon, like that.
Oh, wait, why did it change?
Oh, God, a satanic panic back in the 80s caused... So they had to stop calling things demons, start calling them Tanari. Daemons became Ugaloths. Devils became the Beatazu. And then all the, like, pit chain devil, bearded devil, all got new names. And when things kind of slid back, Ugaloths forever never went back.
Oh, okay. So they rewrote everything back to normal except for them.
Yeah, for some reason, they just left Ugalis where they were, which
probably
is fine.
Demon and Daemon.
Daemon is a little bit confusing,
And then there's probably Matt Daemon was coming up through the ranks, so.
Do you remember Matt Daemon?
I always remember Matt Daemon. I was about to talk. I was trying hard not to talk about Matt Daemon during when you said Oinodaemon.
You want to tell the audience about Matt Daemon?
Yeah, that's actually still in Patreon. It's like super old. I'm like learning how to do post-production for shows like this. And Will ran us through some one-shots. What are they called again?
The Vault Raiders.
The Vault Raiders one-shots. So there's one-shots in Patreon, patreon.com/dungeoncast. You can go listen to them. At the end of the second volume of Vault Raiders, spoilers, but there's a demon that attacks us. And I think I go off the rails right there and be like, does he look like Matt Daemon?
Yeah.
And there's a big demon that looks like Matt Daemon.
And then I made this stupid, what's that movie with the puppets?
Team America World Police.
Yes. I made that reference. I was like, Matt Daemon.
So the demon is Matt Daemon. It's fucking good.
It's so stupid.
everybody's got those moments in their D&D games where they laugh like harder than they ever laugh. Yeah. That's one of them for sure.
Yeah.
That era of our D&D life, like that was one of the funniest fucking things that ever happened. I don't know what the rate of people that watched or consumed that episode of our like actual play stuff mm-hmm. exists mm-hmm. or like who else thinks that's funny. If you're on Patreon, I would definitely go digging for that one. It's
yeah,
old,
absolutely. But I think all those live play stuffs are cold. But anyways, we are so far.
That skill challenge was really cool too that we did.
The hoverboard race. Yeah, that was fun. Okay, back to Hades.
Mad demon.
What can I say? Hades is just so gray and wasteful that we keep getting sidetracked. The Oinolas, sometimes called the Oinodaemon, is the nominal lord of the Ugilis, maintaining their precarious position from the Wasting Tower of Kin Oin. This rulership of the Ugilis is debatable. The Oinoloth may rule Oinos, but the general of Gehenna has a much larger portion of the Ugilis population answering to them. And neither of them have a true iron vice on even their own followers, as the nature of Ugilis kind is one of true selfishness, avarice, and greed. They're not lawful and in control of their, lowers, but like the devils are, right? There's like a rigid hierarchy that keeps everything in control. So like the person in power, despite all the plots, is truly in charge.
I see.
And then with demons, like it's all chaotic, but so it just comes down to might makes right. So like you're in charge, it's because you're fucking in charge because you're
no
so
one
powerful.
Can test you.
Yeah. So. With Ugilis, it's not like either of those things. It's like, yeah, you're in charge in name, but like honestly, like you're not really in charge of much. Because everyone's too busy being selfish and plotting against each other.
Yeah, it's all fluid.
It's all fluid, yeah.
Okay.
And I find that interesting where the Ugilis are way more fluid in their hierarchy than even the demons. Because with the demons, like, within the Chaos Order is found through just the raw power.
I
just find that interesting. So regardless, Oinoloths are extremely powerful beings. They are harbingers of pestilence and the masters of wasting illness, ruling over Oinos, the diseased first layer of the Grey Waste, with their power over plagues. An Oinoloth's head resembles that of a foaming ram that has been deformed by disease. A portion of their skin hideously sloughed off their bodies, and the wool that covers it is removed with ease. So you can just de-skin them.
Just sloughing shit off of people. Left and right.
Unveiling their skin shows their boils, blisters, and pustules, and their flesh is tautly strung over their bones. Despite being the supposed rulers of the Ugilith race, the Oinoloth spends less time coordinating their activities and managing their plans than they do trying to keep their own position. Kin Oin's rulers are in constant competition with each other, with the Oinoloth constantly trying to turn factions against one another in order to turn their ire away from themselves. While many ambitious Ultraloths gun for the throne, some care not for becoming Oinoloth, mostly because it's gross, but also because they prefer to simply manipulate those already in power.
Okay, yeah. It is gross.
It is gross.
A lot of disease, a lot of sloughing.
Yeah.
That'd be cool to utilize Ugiliths in the material plane and tie them in with disease, since it's like clearly a part of like their embodiment.
Right, yeah.
I know
that
devils and demons have that too, like disease kind of like floats around.
Right.
But this... particularly like a plague outbreak, like mm-hmm. we can't treat the plague all the way, we can't get rid of it until we go and kill this thing that's manifested in the material plane.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kinda cool.
Yeah. I like that a lot. That's a good way to introduce Ugilis instead of the other two more popular demon or fiends. Excuse me. So 5e has changed some things when it comes to the Oinoloth. You can find this monster in both Folo's Guide to Monsters, which we discussed earlier, is a no-no book now.
Yeah, was that last episode.
That was last episode, yeah. But it's also in the Monsters of the Multiverse, which is their up-and-up book these days.
Yeah, you know what? That's something I should like parse through, honestly, to see like what... You know, it came out and, oh, cool, like D&D Beyond kind of like doesn't give you information in book format. It's all searchable, or like you can do a combat...
I mean, you
can
pull a source
creator.
Book and go through the PDF.
You can. It's not as, I don't know, it's just different than like reading a book for me, like going through it.
Absolutely.
I have a copy of it. I should like crack it open. Oh, but it's a special edition copy. I don't want to do that. I should go get a regular one. But I don't want to give Wizards of the Coast money still. I still haven't watched a D&D movie.
Hurt. It's pretty good.
I know. I've heard things.
It's very Forgotten Realms.
I was at a table DMing and... somebody was talking about something that happened in the D&D movie. He's like, oh, did you like it? And they're like, yeah, did you like it? I was like, I haven't seen it. And they're like, what the fuck am I doing at your house right now? How have you not seen this movie? Like, I'm here at your house playing D&D.
I believe it's on Amazon Prime now.
Yeah, yeah. I could go get it if I felt like it.
It's worth the watch. I think it's pretty good.
We'll cue that up.
Yeah.
We'll cue that up.
All right. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So you can find it in Volo's Guide to Monsters or The Monsters of the Multiverse. And in both books, Ornoloth is not treated as a unique entity. Instead, it is spoken about as if it is an elite Ugalith unit on the battlefield. Something rare and to be feared, but not something akin to a demon lord or archdevil or other unique ruler-level fiend. So this is where...
Like a Baylor? Balor? Baylor?
Not even that powerful, dude. Oh. Like, I think a Balor or Baylor, whatever you want to call it... And a Pit Fiend, they're both like challenge rating 20. The Ornoloth in Monsters of the Multiverse is like challenge rating 12.
Oh, wow.
That doesn't jive with the lore up to this point.
Right.
But like,
dragons do not fear them because their skin is not sloughable.
There we go. Grim specters of death. Ornoloth spring pestilence wherever they go. When armies recognize their awful forms, their mere appearance causes soldiers to break ranks and flee, lest they succumb to one of the awful plagues that Ornoloth let loose. Ornoloth solve thorny problems by killing everyone involved.
There you go. That'll do it.
Yeah. They are typically hired as a last resort when a siege has gone on too long or an army has proven too strong to overcome. Once summoned, Ornoloth stalk the killing field, poisoning the ground and sickening creatures they encounter. Sometimes they might be hired to lift the very plagues they spread, but the price for such work is high, and the effort turns the creatures they save into debilitated wrecks.
That's fucking hilarious. I'm going to go disease everything, and then I'm going to let somebody come pay me to undisease everything.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah,
and that payment in this regard is probably like souls, right?
Like... Yeah, it's souls or larvae.
Or larvae. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. That's someone's intrusive thought definitely made it into this writing. I was like, wouldn't it be? It would just be so much easier if we just fucking killed everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. On to the second layer or gloom of Hades, Niflheim. This is a layer of gray mist that constantly twists and swirl among sickly trees and ominous bluffs. The thin fog limits vision to 100 feet at best, muffles sound, and eventually saturates everything with dampness.
Oh.
Niflheim is not as war-ravaged as Oinos, probably because the mist hinders combat. Many predators prowl the lands hidden amid the mist, including fiendish direwolves and trolls. Vision, including dark vision, is limited to 100 feet in Niflheim, and perception checks to hear suffer a penalty due to the muffling nature of the fog. Besides the fog, Niflheim consists mostly of dark forest land riddled with jutting bluffs, which suddenly fall away into deep chasms.
I see. Okay. So you need a runner. You need if you're a troop moving through this location, you need somebody out front that's going to fall off a cliff before the rest of your army does.
Right. Yeah. You'll probably sacrifice a lot of people trying to get around here. Yeah.
Several.
Without a doubt.
Several at least.
Yeah. It's just, okay, at this point, like, there's no reason to even be in here at the second layer of Hades if you're involved in the war effort. There's just nothing here. And that's just going to kind of continue as we keep going down.
That sucks. Like... I'll rant at the end.
The only notable location that I could find anything on, besides some Divine Realm locations specific to Forgotten Realms, which I'm not going to get into here, was a place called Death of Innocence. A small town tucked away in the Misty Pines, Death of Innocence is constructed of hewn pine taken from the surrounding forest. The town holds more than 5,000 mortals and non-larva petitioners, though they mostly remain inside their dwellings, giving the town a vacant feeling.
It's just the early internet where you could like accidentally watch a beheading video at like 10 years old.
Yeah, sure. Strangely, those who live behind the protection of the town's walls sometimes strive to improve their lot and break out of apathy. Great wooden gates bar entry to Death of Innocence, and both the gates and the outer wall bristle with spikes. Inside, a broad avenue leads to the town center where a gray marble fountain stands. The wood of the buildings and gate oozes blood as if sap, confirming the belief that petitioners are trapped within the wood.
Oh.
Neither the grays nor the entrapping trait of Hades can penetrate the walls of Death of Innocence. So it's like, it is safe. If you end up here and you find Death of Innocence, you probably want to get inside so that you don't completely die of the gray waste outside its walls.
Okay, so it's safer.
It's safer, yeah. But the problem is once you're inside, like, leaving is dangerous, so you're kind of trapped.
Okay, and you might get eaten by trees, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that a fantasy trope?
eaten by trees?
Well, like getting trapped, people in the trees, or like something like
that's like a old folklore trope.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Dude, have you ever checked out the, you know, Zack Snyder, right? He wrote Batman for a while. I don't know if he still is. It's been years.
The Snyderverse. I don't know. Yeah. It's all a mess.
He's got a couple independent comics. He has one called Witches.
Ooh.
It's fucking incredible, dude. It's incredible. It's just one graphic novel. That's all you need. Just the one graphic novel.
That's cool.
It's a complete closed story. And yeah, like, it's really good. And people trapped in trees is a big reason that I brought it up right now. So.
The next book I have to read has a seagull on it.
The next book you
I have to read, it's got a seagull on it. Marcos gave it to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Oh, man. I'll go get it. It's inside.
All right. We'll talk about it after. Yeah. All right. Back to Hades. The third and final layer of Hades is the gloom known as Pluton. Here is a layer of dying willows, shriveled olive trees, and night black poplars, which are a type of tree.
Mm-hmm.
It is a realm where no one wants to be and no one can remember why they came.
Ah, oh, dang.
It's the worst party.
It's a bad rave.
It's a bad rave. Of course, petitioners have no choice in the matter. Usually the Blood Ward does not reach this lowest gloom, though some raids have occurred when one side or the other wished to retrieve the spirit of a fallen mortal captain who possessed particularly sharp tactical skills.
Okay, that's... All right.
Here the souls of the damned come to rest in the underworld. The underworld is contained within the walls of gray marble that stretch for hundreds of miles and are visible for thousands of miles beyond that. A single double gate pierces the marble walls of the realm. Constructed of beaten bronze, the gates are dented and scarred by those intent on getting past. However, the gates are also guarded by a terrible fiendish beast, a gargantuan three-headed hound made from the squirming, decaying bodies of hundreds of petitioners.
Okay, I mean, that's a little bit of a different take on the three-headed dog or whatever.
Indeed, it is.
What do they call that thing?
Cerberus?
The Cerberus, yeah. So this tactician that is being searched for. So I understand that, like, this is a plot hook, but what the fuck? Like, you don't have a devil, like, in your ranks that is at least as good as this cat. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, like, I would say it'd be pretty rare. It'd have to be someone of legendary status.
Yeah, like, we're going to see if we can get this guy, because that'll turn the tide of the Blood War.
Exactly.
And then that's an adventure. And your mortals have to go down in there to get it before they do, right, or whatever.
Sure, that's a good intro to this. I like that.
I was just like, why write that here? That's probably why, I guess. But
I think it was just a suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond the gate, the inside of the realm appears much like the outside of the realm. Blackened trees, stunted bushes, and wasted ground dominate the landscape. Larvae are everywhere, writhing in the dust, as are gray wraith-like petitioners who are on the verge of being sucked completely dry of all emotion by the spiritual decay of the plane. When they lose that last shred of emotion, the remaining essence becomes one with the gloom of Pluton.
Okay.
Sometimes great heroes or desperate lovers from the material plane travel to this lair via a tributary of the river Styx or portals hidden in great volcanic fissures. They come to the underworld because they believe that they can find the spirit of a friend or loved one and extricate that spirit from a hopeless eternity. Besides larvae, fated petitioners, and the occasional foolish mortals, demons, ugulists, and devils roam this land looking for choice morsels.
Okay, you can do a lot with this location. Mm-hmm. There's that like place in the spirit world in Last Airbender where like souls get lost and trapped in there, mm-hmm. and then they just like wander and meander. They don't, you know, they go crazy in there. They don't know where they are. Mm-hmm. That would be cool to kind of put here. There's some implications that suggest something like that.
So generally speaking, in D&D, like, your soul goes to where it's aligned, right? So I was thinking, why would souls end up here if they weren't evil? I mean, not to say that like evil people can't have lovers that they would go after to save, but I was thinking like, okay, maybe you could have a situation where like someone who notably not evil dies, but because of like maybe where they died or the way in which they died, their soul got lost and all lost souls end up here.
Yeah.
So their soul doesn't belong in the underworld of Hades because they were a good person, but because of like an unfortunate circumstance, it ended up there. And maybe lovers and friends can't abide by that. Like their friend deserves better, so then they go to try and like,
or maybe they got pushed into doing something evil before they died that led to their
death.
Yeah,
there we go. That's another good,
like you do things for your loved ones that it can be suspicious at times, so maybe you made a sacrifice on your morals and you die and now you're here.
Yeah.
And your friends are, they know you're good people, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. They go down to get
you. They come for you, yeah, absolutely.
Like, we gotta use the soul. I mean, if you're gonna go get a soul, and you're playing D&D and you have the capability to go get someone's soul from somewhere, you better just fucking res them. Like, you have the means probably around to fucking resurrect them. So just go get them and get them a chance.
It raises a good point. Like, at what point can one not resurrect somebody? You know what I mean? Like, if their soul is... Yeah, well, I mean, lore-wise, right?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Their soul's barred behind the gates of Hades, like... I mean, should resurrection work? I'd have to look at the actual spell.
You have to go get it out.
Is that how that works?
Well, I would think a lot of times the plane would like safeguard it as like, you know, the planes are hungry too for souls, right?
Yeah, sure.
So maybe like you have to go get the soul out of the plane and bring it somewhere where it's free to be rezzed. You know, like stuff like that. And you can write that into your game. Like, you don't have to, like, but I am curious what the actual lore is supposed to be.
I got the resurrection spell in front of me. It's a level 7 necromancy spell. I've never cast the spell. I've never seen it cast at my table for multiple reasons. I mean, in SuperQuest Saga, I think I told you guys I'm straight outlawing resurrection. If you die, you die. You guys never died, so you guys were good.
Well, I think you did allow Jake had a reincarnate thing, like, up his sleeve.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay. But it never came into play. Yeah. But anyways, this is what it says. You touch a dead creature that has been dead for no more than a century, that didn't die of old age and isn't undead. If its soul is free and willing, so I think free is, there we go, because if it's in Hades, it's not free.
Not free, yeah.
Yeah, the target returns to life with all its hit points. This spell neutralizes. So, okay.
That's the caveat. The soul is free, right there. You decide what is free and what is not.
If that soul ended up anywhere in the lower planes, it's being used as currency, it is not free.
Right, yeah.
So basically, it's like if they died and their soul went to, I don't know, Celestia or Arcadia, then yeah, you're going to resurrect them, no problem.
Don't they do Chris Perkins' game? Like, don't they go get somebody's soul?
Yeah, that was back and forth edition where, they thought Eofel had died. And they tried to resurrect him, but they couldn't because he wasn't dead.
Okay.
And then they were like, wait, he's in hell. And so they had to go get him. Like, basically.
So a little different than the situation.
A little different.
Okay, yeah.
God, that's a good session, man. That's hilarious.
But that's the thing is, like, you have to go to hell to, like, get a soul back out because it's being. I think Dungeons and Daddies did that too.
Yeah.
But that's a great plot hook for, like, late level game. Like, hey, our hero fucking died and we need him to complete the blah blah blah, so we gotta go before we blah blah blah. Dude, in my home game, the deck of many things is sending people's fucking souls wherever, and now I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm riding this fucking plane of existence where you're like in a fucking matrix bubble, and I'm like, okay, you know, like, now they're talking about, I'm like, they kind of played through the rest of the dungeon like nothing's no big deal, but they are talking. Somebody's talking about, like, okay, are we going to go try to figure out what the fuck happened to our dudes and go save them? Because they didn't die.
What is the player who controls that dude doing?
Playing a new character.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
I was like, hey, you got another dude on hand?
Crazy.
Like, let me make one real quick. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I lost two players of the same card.
That's so,
so
crazy.
There's two dudes just in the fucking spheres somewhere.
That's like, the deck of many things, man. That's how that works. Even in SuperQuest Saga, I kind of pulled hey, you lost your girl. You got to go to hell and go get her.
That's true.
Yeah.
We did have to do that.
You did have to do that.
It's a cool thing that you can do in your games. And here's a place where you can, like, send a soul.
Indeed. So that's all I have on Hades, man. What do you think?
It could be cool. It could have easily been really cool.
I agree. Yeah. I think there's a lot of space to make it cool. And I think any DM can easily make it cool. I think my problem with Hades is just, like, I have so many other equivalents or things close enough to it that I have nothing drives me to, like, no, I'm going to use Hades.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the problem. It's like, if I want to go with the fiend stuff, I'm almost definitely going to use the Abyss or the Nine Hells. If I want to go with the gloomy gray stuff, you know, I'm probably going to use the Shadowfell.
I think that's the linchpin is location. Location's everything. So if you need it to be between the nine hells and the abyss, then you would use this instead of the Shadowfell.
Right, yeah, you're
but if
right.
you don't need it to be involved in that stuff, you could mm-hmm. just use the Shadowfell, like
right,
you're saying.
Exactly.
So like that's one stipulation here. It's like we're doing a Blood War campaign or we're doing a Nine Hells campaign or whatever, and like
right. In that case it does become a valuable piece because it's like it's a different vibe that yeah. belongs in the same like setting.
Yeah, like I don't wanna like it wouldn't make sense to go to the Shadowfell, but I want something tasty like that.
Exactly.
Not
yeah.
tasty gray. But you know, that's the thing is you could import this in, make it cool, like hide something awesome here that no one knows is here that yeah. like you get like one little clue to go, you know, find some weapon that's hidden in this fucking weird cliff misty area or, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, stuff like that. The creative people that are out there dungeon mastering can take this and do something with it.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. All right, well, that's all I have on Hades. We ready for a long rest?
Let's do it. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Long Rest. This is the part of the show where we relax. People have been calling, begging me for Slippy's updates.
I think it's one person, but I mean, I hear them loud and clear.
Yeah. Well, no,
I do miss the Slippy sometimes. That was a fun era.
It was. Now I have Ilian and Beer to improv, so I don't need to improv random Slippies. But these Slippies are gray. I'm putting them on.
Yeah, super gray Slippies.
Super gray.
They're not very comfortable. They don't feel very good, but I can't be bothered to take them off.
Yeah, the materials is skin like, and it keeps coming off.
Oh, it's no, gross. It's sloughing.
It's sloughing.
It's hilarious.
I haven't done that in a while. Yeah, so you could check out patreon.com/thedungeoncast like we talk about in short rest, but it'd be really cool if you did because this is a patron episode, right?
This is a patron episode.
I should pull up the patrons and shout them out. I was like, what are we talking about?
What are the chances we could get Jake or Freeland to DM a Vault Raiders or a holiday special or something?
I don't know. Slim, probably.
Because I would love to do some more stuff for the patrons, but God knows I don't have the time to DM anything right now.
You know, it is what it is. We've kind of maxed out our mm-hmm. our free space, mm-hmm, so now we're trying to do stuff in self-contained at the time we've already got. So, you know, Unhauled will make it to the audio waves soon enough. So.
Oh yeah, and eventually.
Well, I've got the patrons pulled up on the last little stretch here. Shall we make a run at them?
Let's do it.
Thank you guys so much for coming on to Patreon. That's patreon.com/thedungeoncast where you could support us, Ilian and Beern, and check out some additional content, including, but not limited to, early episodes as early as we can get them to you that are ad-free, a lot of actual play stuff, OST for Super Quest Saga, and anything else that I make. And there's just a ton of stuff. Episode notes. You guys, go check it out.
Yeah,
sift
yearly
around.
Unique merchandise.
You know, it's been going on in there for like 5 or 6 years. So there's just stuff that's like older, that's like, you know, rigid in its audio quality probably and things like that. It's charming. It's fun. I do recommend you guys go check it out. So for patrons, we've got Locke Dannon.
Thank you, Locke Dannon.
Thank you, Locke Dannon. That's an upgrade. Mage Buffalo Productions.
Thank you, Mage Buffalo Productions.
Woo!
Woo!
Yeah, if you want to plug your shit on here like that, I'm down. Thank you, Mage Buffalo Production. We got SD. SD loves the whole tag here is SD love hearts. I should say hearts. SD hearts. Special guest Jake and friend of the show Josh Freeland.
That's the whole name.
Yep, that's her whole name. Well, she's a longtime YouTube commenter. And stuff. So she upgraded from the woo tier to the.
Annual subscriber.
Thanks, SD.
Thanks, SD.
We've been watching you comment on our shit for a long time. It's always nice. We got Dylon Siegford.
Thank you, Dylon.
It's probably Dylan, but it's fun to say Dylon.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you, Dylan.
Woo!
Woo! Neil Buckley.
Thank you, Neil.
Woo!
Woo!
Asterion's Chew Toy.
Thank you, Asterion's Chew Toy. Asterion's a character from Baldur's Gate 3. And spoilers, he's a vampire.
That was very good. Thank you. That's a great name. And we've got Shay Miller.
Thank you, Shay.
Woo!
Woo!
All right, that was everybody. We really appreciate you guys supporting us.
Yeah, obviously,
thank you to everybody who's still on. Maybe one day, like towards the end of the year, I'll just fucking read the whole list.
Holy shit. Okay.
I'll just fucking rail them off.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
Maybe we'll do it over the Pokemon rap or something.
Yes!
Fucking hilarious.
Absolutely.
And I won't try to make it rhyme. I'm just going to say whatever order they're in.
Pokemon rap doesn't rhyme.
Well, I think they don't. Oh, it doesn't.
It doesn't really rhyme almost ever.
I think that when they can, they do, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's been a while.
They can make a better effort if they really wanted to try, because they don't.
Does that song air in like the Japanese? Because I watched it as in English as a
kid.
It
might just be an American thing. I don't actually know.
I have to find out.
Is there a Japanese Pokemon rap? Holy shit.
Well, I'm pretty sure Pikachu in Japanese is just Pikachu, right?
Yes.
So it's not like it's.
And that's an ongoing thing with all the Pikachu clones, is they always keep their Japanese name when they come over.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Like,
some of the Pokemon.
Like Togedemaru. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you everybody on Patreon again. I appreciate you guys. We'll figure it out. It would be cool to run through the whole list and just thank everybody that's been around and still there. If you leave, you won't make that whenever we do it. Hopefully by the end
Patreon
of the year.
Patreon rap.
Yeah, it'd be cool. What else do we got? Okay. Do we want to talk about... let's just go the notes below. We have a P.O. box. You guys can send us physical mail, like postcards or letters. We'll read them on the show. I need to go check. By next recording, I'll have checked the box. And then we've got the dungeoncast@gmail.com is our email. You can reach out to us there. But if you want to talk to us in more of a real-time situation, check out our Discord. You can join there and talk D&D and Dungeon Cast stuff, Super Quest Saga stuff, FBAT stuff with like-minded people. And you can like hit us up and ask us questions and shit. Let's see. We got social media, Will?
Yeah, you can find us on Twitter or, sorry, X for X. Now. You can find us on Instagram. We're on Threads and we're on Mastodon. I'm posting on all of them mostly daily. Again, it's been a little slow for me this last week, but I'm planning on getting in there daily and posting.
And then what does that leave? That leaves the Baldur's Gate giveaway. That's probably popped off at this point.
Yeah, as soon as we know in real time who's won, we'll announce it here on the show.
Yeah, we'll do another giveaway soon. That's not like maybe we'll give away some books or something again. Who knows? Something, man. Something cool. Hey, let us know if you guys made it to this part of the episode. Let us know what you want to see in a giveaway, because I would like to know what the people crave.
Yeah, I mean, nice to hear some suggestions for sure.
Yeah, and we'll do one.
Yeah.
So, Star Seeker's Guide to Drakenstar.
It's a book that's being written, and it is based off of our live play Super Quest Saga, a sci-fi high fantasy adventure. And essentially, it's just a way to bring your D&D game to space. I would say it's more fantasy than it is sci-fi, but it is definitely both.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, it's dragons in space with spaceships. There's laser guns and laser blades alongside normal swords and normal armors. And
there's magic science.
There's magic science, and there's science magic. And there's going to be a whole bestiary of alien monsters. There's going to be an entire section of galactic treasure trove items. There's going to be over 11 new subclasses. There's going to be over 11 new species that you can play. And if you want to check it out, go ahead and pre-order the book over at DrakenStar.com.
If you like stuff like Psijic and Magiance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. We should call it a game.
Let's call it a game. We'll talk to you guys later.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's Hypothetical.